Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, the sun is shining a little bit brighter, the grass is greener, and the birds are chirping a little bit louder because Scottie Scheffler has once again won a golf tournament. That's right. Our long national nightmare is over. And Rex, he didn't just win the FedEx St. Jude Championship, which you are covering in Memphis. He absolutely obliterated the best field of the PGA Tour season. All 7 of the top players were there. This guy Scheffler won by 8.
Two of those four things are very much true. The national nightmare is over. The sun is shining. Some would say the sun is cooking.
Too bright.
This part of the country. The grass is not greener. The grass is very much dead in Memphis after this week with temperatures above 100 degrees all week long. And I'm not sure there's any birds alive, but you're absolutely right. It's been a pretty amazing week when it comes to Scottie Scheffler. I can't stress how hot it was. I really can't. These metaphors are going to continue.
I don't know if you're sunburned. I don't know if you're shiny. I don't know.
A little bit sunburned. A little bit of light seems to be a little bit off right now, but I'm going to go ahead and power through it. I do think it's amazing that we've been waiting all season long for this to happen. And I will say that I think Scottie Scheffler, who usually isn't, you know, the most open when it comes to post-round interviews, even in victory, he's still a little guarded in how he addresses the media. Even in his interview with Amanda Baleones after he wins on CBS, he was kind of asked about, look, you have been statistically dominant all season long, but you obviously have not won since January at the American Express. What does this feel like? And he went immediately to the heart of the matter and like, look, it doesn't feel nearly as good to be statistically dominant as it does to be holding a trophy at the end of a tournament. And I can only imagine his level of frustration over the course of the last 6 months or so, because you were so close. I think it would be an entirely different conversation if he was completely out of it, if he wasn't even in the mix on Sunday afternoons, if it wasn't this statistically dominant, but it wasn't. He was putting himself there. We're gonna have a long conversation about the Player of the Year award in a few minutes. This is the tipping point. I feel like this is the one thing I think we've been waiting for all season long when it comes to Scottie Scheffler. And you're absolutely right. He not only won, and he not only did it in a way that is really a testament, because he did it with his putter, and we're gonna unfold all that in a minute. And that's the one area I think you and I both would agree on over the course of the season has been hurting him the most. It's the one thing he's been missing. But I mean, I think statistically, that's the only way you could have divined this. And I had a long conversation with his swing coach, Randy Smith, earlier in the week about this. And he tended to agree that he looked at Friday's round, that 61, that's what really put him out in front. That's what sort of gave him that head of steam to finish off the tournament and win by as many strokes as he did. And when Randy looked at that Friday round, he said the difference was there was one or two putts over the course of that round that looked like they were going to shoot past the hole and not lip out. Like, we're not even talking about close lip outs. They were just going to run past the lip. And at the last minute, they just turned and kind of fell in. He said, that's what's been missing all season long. Like, look, the confidence in the putting is there because he's done it in the past. He has enough history not to have too much scar tissue, even over the last 6 months, but to do it in the dominant fashion and to do it with his putter. I mean, this is his best round statistically, strokes gained putting of his career, almost by a half shot. That's something.
I mean, this was Scottie at full flight. This was Scottie that we'd seen in 2024, certainly at times in 2025. And we've been waiting, wondering. Certainly he was lights out. The American Express could have won that golf tournament by 6 or 7 shots, if not for letting up a little bit at the end with a late double bogey. And we've just been sort of waiting for those final pieces. And some of that certainly could be tournament variance. Some of that could be going up against players who are at their peaks of their powers, whether it was a Matt Fitzpatrick or a Cameron Young earlier in the season, Roy McIlroy, the Masters at Well, jumping out to a historic halfway lead. So I think there was a little bit of an anomaly to that respect, because statistically, they mentioned on the broadcast, this was the best statistical season of Scottie Scheffler's career. That is not true. It is the most well-rounded, the most complete season of Scottie Scheffler's career. And it actually appears right now, as we sit here with two events remaining in the PGA Tour regular season, that Scottie is going to finish, Rex, inside the top 10 in all four major strokes gained statistical categories. That's off the tee, that's approaching the green, that's around the green, and putting. And strokes gained data has only been around since 2003, 2004. So we don't have Tiger's 2000 season to compare, which you could probably make a strong case that he was in the top 10 there. But in the strokes gained era, we have never seen this before, where Scottie is among the top 10 in all four categories. You're thinking, oh, well, what about Tiger in 05 and Tiger in 06 and Tiger in 07 and Tiger in 09 and Tiger in 2012 and 2013 and 2019 and the like. And that's true. He was statistically awesome. He was statistically dominant in those years. But Rex, even in those great years, and they were historic years for Tiger Woods, some of the best golf he's ever played in 06 and 07, there was still at least one part of his game that statistically was not among the top 10. Some years it was his driver and he was off the tee. He was a little bit lacking. Some years it was around the green. We always think of Tiger having like this flair for the dramatic and the hole outs and the chip ins and the pitch ins and the bunker shots and just the great hands he has. And obviously all of that was very, very memorable. But from a statistical standpoint, there were still some years in which he was outside the top 10. And so, yes, underwhelmingly results wise, this has been, I would say, a frustrating, an annoying season for Scottie Scheffler, at least compared to what we'd seen since 2022. But the completeness of his game, the all around nature of it, where he has so many different levers that he can pull if one part of his game is off, we've never seen Scottie like this before. And it's why you can look at the results and you can look at the two wins and you can look at the no majors and you look at the number of top five finishes, which is now 12 on the PGA Tour this season, and be just a little bit underwhelmed results wise, performance wise. You could make the argument that no, it's not Scottie at his peak. Those are the other years from a strokes gained total perspective, but the completeness, man, he's never been more well-rounded than he is right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm actually a little bummed that you didn't have strokes gained in 2000, because I feel like that would have been a season where it would have been competitive. It would have been comparable on this front, only because Tiger will tell you from a driving perspective, 2000 was his best season. That became his Achilles heel over the next decade or so as he worked through some things with his swing. His iron play was always going to be top 10. I would argue he was always going to be top 10 when it came to putting as well. But yeah, that's a good comparison. I'll go back to the third hole on Sunday, and it was still early and he still had a pretty commanding lead. I think he was two shots up at that point, but to bounce a chip shot for your third shot on the par five off a sprinkler head, and you can make the argument here, and this is a very good argument. They were talking about how unlucky that was on the broadcast, and it really is unlucky. However,
had to be the worst break of the year. It's hard to imagine one that was worse.
No, it was a bad break. I'm not doubting it. But also, Scottie Scheffler, being the tactician that he is, knows exactly what was there. He wasn't surprised to find out that there was a sprinkler head there. And so he was playing into the vaginal vicinity. And I would argue he must have missed his spot by 3 or 4 feet to have come even that close to it. Because I can't imagine a scenario where he would have played it that close and just taken that chance, knowing that there's water on the other side. However, this goes to his mental strength. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I don't think he gets enough credit for how mentally strong he is, not just on the golf course, but dealing what he's dealt with over the course of this season. I cannot reiterate how this must have just been so aggravating for a player who for the last few seasons has made it look easy. And he made it look easy again, at least statistically, to your point, and yet the results weren't there. And I'm sure in his mind, and we've seen it on the golf course, I think it was a few weeks ago, where at the Memorial, where he was hitting some shots and it wasn't turning out like he liked, and he was giving poor Teddy an earful. And I remember talking with some colleagues about this who were walking with that group. And the funny thing was, he wasn't really talking to Teddy. He was talking to himself. He wasn't complaining to his caddy about this. He was trying to justify it in his own mind. I think he's a very process-driven type person. We know that about him. But he's also, to a certain degree, as much as a professional golfer can be, a results-oriented person. And so in his mind, I can only imagine how hard it was to wrap around that I am doing this better than almost anyone else has ever done this in the history of the game. And yet somehow, the only trophy I have on my shelf right now is the American Express way back in January. I don't know if you can quantify how much of a relief this must have been for him.
I mean, there had to have been at least some small part of him where he hits the sprinkler head, it goes in the water, he ends up making a bogey on the easiest hole in the golf course on three. Some part of him saying, like, look, here we go again. Like, it just seems like every single time that I get in the mix, something happens. I miss a putt. I can't build the momentum. Someone shoots the round of their life. I started the tournament poorly. Remember early in the season, he had those rough Thursdays, and all of a sudden he was battling back, and that's how he was sort of backdooring top three, top five finishes. There had to have been at least some small part of him, but he wasn't going to let this go. What happens on five, the most difficult holes at TPC Southwind? Absolutely splits the fairway. on the 530-yard par four, hits a 200-yard approach to 10 feet, pours it in, backs it up with a 20-footer on the next hole for birdie. So Scotty's surging, others faltering. All of a sudden, that ball goes in the water on three. His lead is cut down to one. You think, oh boy, here we go again. It's going to get really tight. In a matter of 30, 45 minutes, all of a sudden, his lead has been restored to five, and he was never threatened the rest of the way. It is interesting, Rex, because you and I do not do rundowns, but what I do have is just copious amounts of notes, because our title for the midweek podcast, with this was the most important event of the PGA Tour season, and there's a lot of reasons, and I think Scotty winning only sort of underscores the importance, certainly specifically for him, also the player of the year race. We're going to get to the top 50 bubble as well, but I did want to get into the actual round itself, because here was a very interesting dynamic with Scotty Scheffler, and he had won 10, he converted 10 straight 54-hole leads, the likes of which we had not seen since Tiger Woods in his prime. But he had a very interesting, and I would call it even an awkward dynamic, with one of his best friends in the entire world, Sam Burns, going in that final group, just two shots shy. What did you think of how that dynamic played out? Because it did sort of fizzle after about 45 minutes, because this could have been a really interesting Sunday had Sam Burns hung in there, not ended up making double on three to really find himself a little bit of a bind.
Well, I was going to say, I think the double on three, even with Scotty Scheffler making the bogey, seemed to take him out of it. If not mathematically, then maybe just mentally. Just forget he just looked shook. He looked like, yeah, this wasn't going to be his day. It was interesting. The day before on Saturday night, Scotty Scheffler telling us about how uncomfortable it was going to be for him. That, yes, he and Sam Burns are really good friends. They vacation together. Their families are close. And when you're playing together, I guess the go-to when you're with your friend is just treat him as your friend. But we've seen this from Scotty before. It was just a few years ago at the President's Cup when he was paired against Tom Kim, who, again, is another friend from Dallas. They've spent a lot of time together. And in retrospect, Tom Kim was really clear. It got testy. Like, Tom Kim had to learn really in the moment that, oh, we're not friends apparently today. Like, today of all days, we're not going to be friends. And I think Scott has a little bit of that in him, even when it comes to Sam Burns, even this situation. There was empathy. There's no doubt he felt bad for Sam afterwards in his interview with Amanda. He talked about Sam's season's kind of been like mine. He's been close. He's had some opportunities. Some things haven't gone his way. There was some real sympathy for him on that front. However, there wasn't a whole lot because, again, Scotty clearly needed this one. I mean, it's weird to say for someone who is as accomplished as he is in world number one and everything that he has done this season. We can't ignore the fact that beyond that one victory, he was still very much, I would say, in the lead for that player of the year vote, despite the fact he'd only won one time because of how consistent he has been. I will say when it comes to Sam Burns, though, and this is not a trend yet. I don't know how we're going to quantify it, but if you go back to the Open Championship, when he goes into the final round with a lead, and I think he's the only player out of the top five to shoot over par. He shoots a 72 to end up finishing third. Very, very similar situation today. And I'm not saying this is a trend because he's been in this situation plenty. I was at Colonial the year that he went head-to-head with Scotty Scheffler and beat him there, and they were going on vacation right after that. I can only imagine how uncomfortable that vacation must have been. I was at the match play when he went head to head with Scotty Scheffler to win the match play in Austin before they got rid of that. So he's been in big moments and delivered, but certainly you look at his last two. Actually, I think this is his last two starts to not just play, but to win a title at the Open Championship in this week. And he just didn't have it on Sunday.
I mean, there was a lot at stake, I would argue, for both players. Again, as statistically excellent as Scotty Scheffler has been in 2026, this was the first time he'd actually had a 54-hole lead heading into the final round. We always look back to the Amex and the dominating performance there. He'd actually faltered just a little bit on Saturday and was passed by Siwoo Kim as well as Blade Browns and did not have the 54-hole lead. So it was obviously a point of emphasis for him, wanting to convert this. Sam Burns, you mentioned those two tournaments, Rex, at Colonial and the match play. Those are Sam Burns' last wins on the PGA Tour. Stroke play back in 2022 at Colonial, the match play in 2023. As good as he has been in 2026, he is still trophy-less at this point. And again, this has been, I would argue, the best season of Sam Burns' career, even without trophies, the way that he's put himself in contention to win two major championships, first the U.S. Open, as well as the Open Championship, where you mentioned he had the 54-hole lead, the iron play, which has always sort of been one of his bugaboos. Yes, he's always been a great putter. on the PGA Tour, but the strides that he has made with his approach by this year, that is why he is now firmly among the top five players in the FedEx Cup standings again, despite not having a victory. So there was a lot at stake for both those players. I actually think it was very helpful for Scotty that that sort of dynamic fizzled early within the first hour, just to sort of diffuse the situation a little bit. And they were laughing and having a great time afterward. And Sam Burns was certainly reflective, saying like, look, I knew I was probably going to have to play close to a perfect round to beat Scotty Scheffler. I knew it. He knew it. Everyone watching knew it. He did exactly what I thought he was going to do. He made one bogey and he shot 66. I needed to be close to perfect. And I was anything but on Sunday as he faltered a little bit down the leaderboard. I also did think, Rex, this performance by Scotty sort of epitomized his greatness. You look at what he did on Friday, made 11 birdies in that round of 61. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, certainly was off his game a little bit, battling his swing early, but course corrected and was able to shoot 68 and maintain his advantage heading into the final round. And then on Sunday, even after that bad break, certainly showed some resilience, but just the dominance was oppressive. It was suffocating. He makes the most birdies on the PGA Tour, and he also makes the fewest bogeys on the PGA Tour. And that is how you can take a lead from 2 to 4 to 6 to 8. It's now his second win on the PGA Tour by 8+ strokes. The only player with more than that, obviously Tiger Woods, who did it 10 times.
I would look at, and you brought up the stat, but now it's 9 for 13 with at least a share of the 54-hole lead going into Sunday. I hate comparing players to Tiger Woods because it's unfair to the player because Tiger Woods was such a unique player. But on that front, that is very Tiger Woods-esque. And I wrote Saturday night that everybody in the field knew that he was 8 for 12 and he'd done it the last five times he had an opportunity. You're right. He hadn't done it this season. I think the last time he'd done it is at the Open Championship last season. But he is a closer. I mean, that's the easiest way to put it. And it's because of all the reasons you just pointed out, but because he doesn't make mistakes and he's going to make birdies and he's never going to let up. And he's going to play that defense type of golf that he's going to make you come get him. And Sam Burns was right. I mean, I don't think anybody really had a realistic opportunity, even if Scotty Scheffler went out and only shot one under or maybe even par, because the golf course was playing hard. Only Scotty Scheffler made it look easy. It was brutal conditions. Again, can't stress enough, over 100 degrees. I think the feels like temperature today was 111 degrees. I think a lot of players were looking at other areas. I think a lot of players were looking at other things. If you're Sungjae Im, certainly he had set himself up going into Sunday to make that leap from outside the top 50 into the top 50. He was the only player to do that. I'm sure at some point, he just forgot about Scotty Scheffler and just sort of committed himself to just don't do anything stupid. Make sure you've got a tee time next week at the BMW Championship and see if you can make up some ground and set yourself up to make it to East Lake.
I mean, Siwoo Kim, much like Sam Burns, I would argue this has been statistically his best season. Consistency-wise, this has been his best season. He was the winner of the B flight. Siwoo Kim all the way up to fourth in the FedEx Cup standings. Again, that doesn't really matter all of that much because when you head to East Lake, it's just the top 30 players. And you're going to be giving yourself an opportunity, but it's certainly cashing some nice checks as Siwoo Kim during the 2026 PGA Tour season. As we mentioned, Sam Burns after that Sunday 73 drops all the way into a tie for third place. Rex, I want to scroll all the way down to the bottom of the leaderboard with Rory McIlroy, who placed 66th out of the 68 players who ended up completing the tournament. Daniel Berger was a non-starter, pulling out pre-tournament, and Robert McIntyre, after shooting in the 80s on Thursday, withdrew from the tournament as well. So Rory, out of 68 players, finishes 66. This was the first time we'd seen him since the Open. I'm not even sure Rust might be an understatement as it relates to Rory McIlroy's game. Did not do anything particularly well. Nearly last in the field off the tee. Hit 58% of his greens in regulation, 50% scrambling rate, and one of the worst in the field in putting. Where's Rory going from here? I know you had an opportunity to talk with him on Sunday.
That's 66th that he finished is actually an improvement over the last time he was here, which would have been 2 years ago. He didn't play last year. He finished 68th. It's obvious, and I'm not here to make excuses for Rory McIlroy. I think his resume speaks for himself. It's obvious this golf course is not his brand of vodka, and I get it. It's not for everyone. It's obvious Memphis in August isn't his brand of vodka. I would argue it shouldn't be anybody's brand of vodka because it was absolutely miserable out there, and we all know the subtext. around Rory this week. He's not going, it looks like, he's not going to make his 15 event minimum on the PGA Tour. Now, what does that mean? It means as someone who plays both the European Tour and the PGA Tour, he is in danger of losing his membership, which means that he would be limited, and I did think this was funny when I reported it earlier in the week, that he would be limited to 7 sponsor exemptions as a non-member, and of course he's qualified for the majors, which means he would play 11 times, which my guess in the back of his mind, he's thinking to himself, that's how many times I
glorious.
Like to play.
That sounds so great.
So the punishment would be exactly what he wants. He made it clear early in the week that he's in conversations with Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour. They're going to come up with some sort of solution. And to be clear, just to try to button this up, Rory can play in the fall. He can get to 15 if he really wanted to. He's not going to. I asked him what his schedule was, and he has 6 more events after Eastlake, and not one of them are on the PGA Tour. But he could, and my guess is they'll come up with some sort of solution, which is going to benefit the tour, and of course, Rory McIlroy as well. All that being said is because he didn't want to be in Memphis this week. He was here this week because it would have been a really bad look if you're going to call fall 1 event short of the 15 event minimum, falling 2 short because you don't want to come and sweat all week in Memphis. It's just not a good look. And I think you could see it in his body language. He didn't want to be out there. There was definitely some rust, and he admitted he hadn't really done much at all at home, practicing-wise, since leaving the Open Championship. He did say when we spoke to him on Sunday afternoon, he felt like he found a little something that he can work with on the second 9 coming in. There was a couple of birdies, although he did finish with back-to-back bogeys, so I'm not quite sure how much of that is going to do. He's going to go home for a couple of days before heading up to the BMW Championship. And this goes to, I really think, what he talked about at the Open Championship, the idea that it's hard for him to get motivated for events like this, which isn't great for the PGA Tour to hear, but at this stage in his career, his motivation is going to go into different areas, and playing in these events at this time of year, that ain't it.
I mean, this was, as you mentioned, all optics. Like, he didn't need to be in Memphis. Quite frankly, he doesn't need to be at the BMW this week, at Bellerive in St. Louis. All he did by finishing 66th in the playoff opener was dropped to 13th in the FedEx Cup standings. He's still going to be at Eastlake. He's still going to be at the Tour Championship. He's still going to have an opportunity to add yet another FedEx Cup title to his collection. He didn't have to be there, but as you mentioned, it would be a very bad look. It would certainly not be sort of the compromise that PGA Tour CEO Brian Rolapp was looking at. But yeah, even Roy admitted he is so far away from contention at this point that he's just got to put his head down with Harry Diamond, his caddy, and his swing coach, Michael Bannon, and try to figure out something. Because as Scottie Scheffler showed in the playoff opener, he's just now getting cooking. I loved the way Rex, that Roy described these playoffs. I'd never heard described in such a manner as a 12-round tournament. And sure, it'd be great to knock off one of these tournament titles, but you really want to be at your best over those last 4 rounds at Eastlake, when it's going to be hugely consequential, when it's going to be historic, when it's going to be in the record books. That's what Rory is gunning for. That's why I think it's sort of speaks to why he was pretty carefree about his performance and didn't seem to be all that stressing as he departed Memphis on Sunday. All right, as I mentioned, we have all these notes because, yes, the top 50 race was really hot and heavy. And there were 2 players who I find really interesting for 2 different reasons who were at or sort of front and center with this top 50 race. And if you're not following along on why this is so important and why we described the midweek podcast that the FedEx St. Jude Championship is the most important event of the PGA Tour season, because it was the cut down from 70 players to 50 players in the FedEx Cup standings. That is important because those players in the top 50 gain entry into the signature events in 2027. The kick-on effect then is that is hugely beneficial for 2028, when you then need to be among the top 90 in the FedEx Cup standings at the end of the 2027 season. Yes, there will be a quiz at the end of the podcast to make sure you're getting all of those numbers and those check marks accordingly. How did the race for top 50 feel and play out, Rex? Because that's obviously the biggest reason why you were at the playoff opener, because it is so hugely important for the membership to be among the top 50.
Oh, it was the only reason I was here. Like, look, Scotty winning is really cool as a side note, but the fact of the matter is this is the most important event of the year when it comes to those sort of cutoffs. And I wrote this Saturday night that you reported this last week at the Wyndham Championship, trying to get inside the top 70 to make the playoffs. If not, you've got some room to improve over the fall. That's the point. If you don't make it into the top 70, you have an entire fall schedule and Q school to either regain or improve your status. Making it to East Lake comes with plenty of perks. There's plenty of things that come along with that, but there aren't really any pitfalls. I mean, nothing really happens if you don't make it from St. Louis to Atlanta, other than you're just going to not sweat for 1 week, which is probably something that everybody is perfectly happy with at this point.
Majors. I mean, the majors of getting the tour championship in the top 30. That's by far the biggest perk.
It's a perk, but again, there's no real pitfalls. It's not as though you're going to walk away from there shaking your head. It's why it was so important. I think we saw it pretty much all Sunday afternoon. I think Keith Mitchell would be the one that I was watching most of the day, because as he put it, he's had 1 foot put in, 1 foot out of the top 50 pretty much all year long. And he is the perfect example. Like, if you were looking for a paradigm of hope and you're a player that did not advance to next week's BMW Championship, I would argue Keith Mitchell's season this year is a perfect example of how you can scrape it together. It's hard because you can't plan your schedule. You have to play a lot of golf. You have to play really well at the right times, and you're not going to get any rest, but you can. He wasn't qualified for any of the signature events this season. He ended up playing in five of them. I think only one of those was a sponsor exemption. He ended up playing his way in to the rest of them, and he came really close. I think it came down for him and Jordan Spieth to the difference of one stroke per player. It was one stroke difference over the course of this entire week, not just Sunday afternoon, that would have made the difference going into this final round. That's tough for a player like Keith Mitchell, who was standing in the mud on the final hole, knowing what he had to do and couldn't pull it off, and ended up putting his approach shot in the water onto 18. That's tough for a player like Jordan Spieth, who I was sort of surprised at. I don't want to call it vengeance, but there was a little bit of anger in his voice when he said that this will be the last time that I'm in this situation. He has a lot of confidence in his game right now, and I think he was more disappointed in himself because he knows he's playing some of the best golf he's played, not just this year, but in a long time. But to ask for a top 10 finish this particular week on a golf course that I would argue probably doesn't suit his game, even when he is playing well and he hasn't had a top 10 all season long, was probably asking for a lot. But both of those players were intriguing to me. And again, there was only one player that played their way in and one player that dropped their way out. I think if you had to ask me for one more, it's going to be Maverick McNealy, because here's a guy like he was 2 years ago, sort of came in right on the bubble, needed to do something pretty good to make sure he got there. And he got it done coming down the stretch, and he almost got it done 2 years ago. I think that speaks volume about a player. You can talk about someone winning or losing on a Sunday afternoon and what they learn from that. I think you get very, very similar emotions and very, very similar feels when it comes to something like this. And that's important to you. And Mav said it better than you and I possibly could of why this is so important. He said this was the most important of the season when it comes to PGA Tour membership. Clearly winning a major, winning another event is important, but when it comes to PGA Tour membership and your priority in getting into certain events, this is the pinnacle.
I think that was a good synopsis. I want to sort of hit all of those players differently. Keith Mitchell is an interesting one. He was at my US Open final qualifier in Georgia, and he sort of described the plight of a player who is sort of balancing, as he mentioned, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. He described himself as sort of the first alternate all season long, first alternate for signature events, first alternate for major championships. He said almost every single week he would have three or four flight options because he just, quite frankly, didn't know where he was going to be going. Was he going to be going home? Was he going to be going to one of these elevated events? Was he going to be going to a full field event? Was he going to be playing five in a row, six in a row? Was he going to be having unexpected time off? It was a really stressful way to live. And this issue on the PGA Tour is going to be solved for 2028. In 2028, everyone's going to know, here's my schedule. Here's when they're going to be played. Here's where my time off. And it's just going to be a race to the top 90. And that's sort of how it should be. But right now you have these two tiers, these two tracks sort of codifying what has always existed on the PGA Tour. But it does create a dynamic where There's a hefty part of the membership that doesn't know exactly where they're going to be playing week in and week out. And the tour has done a pretty good job, I would argue, over the past couple of years of trying to capture these players with these next 10s and the swing fives. Basically trying to say, if you perform in a full field event, you should have an opportunity to alter your career trajectory. You should have an opportunity to play your way into some of these signature events. And that's how the system started, and I would argue it's been somewhat successful to this point. Should we even have this issue? No. and they are going to be fixing it in 2028. But Keith Mitchell was a perfect example of a player that is just really hard. And yes, he's disappointed now. Yes, he's frustrated that he probably came a shot or two shy of cracking that top 50. And I'm sure he's going to be looking back on 16 and having just 203 into the par five and walking off with a par. I'm sure he's going to be looking back at 17, having a 15-footer for birdie and being unable to do so. I'm sure he's going to be looking back on 18, thinking that he absolutely striped his three wood around the corner, doesn't quite carry as far as he thinks it is, kicks left, and all of a sudden he's scrambling and ends up making a bogey. Those are all little shots, but I think at the end of the season, Keith Mitchell, who again is part of that future competitions committee, who's been devoting himself each and every week to the betterment of the PGA Tour for 2028 and beyond, I think he can be pretty proud of the body of work. And again, you still have an opportunity, Rex. The players who are 51 through 60 at the end of the fall still get entry into those first two signature events of 2027. So all's not lost for all these players who just happen to miss out. It's just going to be a little bit harder. You may have to play in the fall to just at least a little bit to secure that status, but not all is lost. Yes, it's a pretty strict cutoff point, but I still think at number 51, 52, 53 in the standings, those players can be pretty proud of what they accomplished in 2026.
No, and I think a lot of players are going to be looking to that. Jordan Spieth sort of talked about how he plans to address his schedule in the fall. Probably he'll play more in the fall than he anticipated doing because he knows we've seen it now. That 60, that 51 through 60 category gets into it, those first couple of signature events. And you can set yourself up for success going forward. And sort of beyond that, and Matt McNeely talked about this, Keith Mitchell talked about it, Jordan talked about it. It's big next year because of 2028. Looming. If you look at what happened this year, the top 50 players who from last season that played in all the signature events this season, 30 of those 50 made it this far. That gives you an idea that if you're in that top 50, 30 of those 50 at least made it this far, which is top 70. Starting next year to get into that tier one, to get into the championship series, it'll be 90. And so you're really setting yourself up for success if you can get into those signature events because they're worth more points, they're worth more money. I think the comp that I came up with, and this took a little bit of math, which you know better than anyone, that I'm not very good at. If you were to take Brooks Koepka's season, and we all know that he came back from LIV Golf and he was relegated to the full field events. He wasn't exempt into the signature events. He could have played his way in, but he ended up not doing that. If Brooks Koepka would have had the exact same season that he had playing the full field events in the signature events, he would have finished closer to 60 than he did 90. He ended up finishing 94th, didn't qualify for the playoffs. That's the difference. That's the difference. A top 10 in a signature event is worth so much more money than a top 10 in a full field event. And I think all of these players know that.
Rex, was there a better player to have on a top 50 bubble on Sunday of the FedEx St. Jude Championship than Jordan Spieth, who by his very nature, it's in his competitive DNA that he is wildly unpredictable, not just from week to week, tournament to tournament. We're talking round to round. We're talking hole to hole. And I was absolutely enamored by what I saw over that final 2 hours. And yes, this was a Jordan Spieth experience. He made three bogeys and he ended up missing out in the top 50. But I was making notes continuously of what actually was transpiring as Jordan was trying to crack this top 50. So earlier in the round, he sort of whiffed a sand wedge from like 110 yards. They, like Kurt Byram on the call was like, that has to be the worst sand wedge that Jordan Spieth has hit the entire season long. And it was just a little bit ominous for what we're going to be seeing over the final back nine of this golf tournament. On the 11th hole, the par 370 yards, he hooks his tee shot onto the bridge. On 12, out of a fairway bunker, he skulls his bunker shot. On 13, he buries a 30-footer for birdie to solidify his standing a little bit. On 14, hit a terrible tee shot on the par three, ends up getting up and down for par. On 15, with less than driver, pulls his tee shot badly into the water, ends up making bogey. And on 16, the easiest hole on the golf course, he's over the green in two shots, one of the world's best scramblers. Like seriously, over the past decade or two, you could count on one hand the number of players you would rather have with a pitch shot than Jordan Spieth. What happens? He doesn't even hold the green with his pitch shot, ends up making par. Like that was the Jordan Spieth experience encapsulated in a 2 hour span. CBS had to have absolutely loved that he was front and center. I know it was disappointing for him, and I know it was probably disappointing for viewers and fans of Jordan Spieth that he did not get among the top 50, but from a theater, like a theatrical aspect for the pure cinema of a PGA Tour Sunday where it's supposed to be so important and significant and consequential, like Jordan Spieth was the perfect front man for this show.
We had this conversation. ESPN Plus is doing that Quiet Please feed, which essentially is without announcers. And at first, I wasn't a big fan, but then Jordan Spieth was one of those feeds, I think on a Saturday morning a few weeks ago. And I came away thinking, yes, give me all of this. My life is complete now that I can have this. You're absolutely right. One of the players who was on the bubble, didn't play his way in, was Matt McCarty. And he ended up texting, I guess, our former colleague Shane Bacon, who ended up tweeting the text out saying that Matt McCarty's take on it is to have your season depending on Jordan Spieth on a Sunday afternoon is a roller coaster, because you have no idea where the emotions are going to go from there. And I'll also say that part of this change in 2028, and we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but there's going to be a quote unquote last chance event or series of events in the fall. This is the best part of that. Like, whether it's Jordan Spieth or not, you get these emotions. You saw it on Keith Mitchell. You saw it on Maverick McNeely. You certainly heard it and saw it on Jordan Spieth. That's the emotional side. That's the human side of golf. You and I both love those stories.
I mean, Jordan has a lot of confidence that 2027 is going to be a great year. He was obviously frustrated that he could not get among the top 50. I will be curious to see if he plays in the fall. I don't believe he hinted at what his fall schedule was going to be. But if you think back to 2025, he did not play from the FedEx St. Jude Championship to the Hero World Challenge, despite not cracking that top 50. That was somewhat controversial for a player who was probably banking, knowing he was going to be having sponsor exemptions into those signature events, and those eventually came in for 2026. Will he follow the same path again next year? Because I jotted down some of the names, Rex, who were outside that top 50, who, again, are going to be vying for some of those sponsor exemptions into the signature events in 2027. That's Jordan. That's Jackson Koivun, Brooks Koepka, Tony Finau, Keegan Bradley, Ben James, Max Homa, Shane Lowry, Jason Day, Billy Horschel. It gets real crowded real quick. So I'll be curious to see if there's a different tact for Jordan Spieth this fall as it relates to playing opportunities.
Last year was a little different, just to clean that up, with Jordan going into the fall, because we know that 51 through 60 is pretty much locked into those first few events. Also, keep in mind, Jordan Spieth is an AT&T ambassador. You would imagine that's a pretty easy one for him to anticipate getting into Pebble Beach. But where he finished last year coming out of Memphis versus this year, he felt pretty confident that he was going to finish in that first 10 out. This time's a little bit different. He did sort of mention to reporters on his way out. He right now, he plans on playing Japan at the very least, which will be played in the fall. I believe it's the third event in the fall. And he said he'll consider adding some, depending on where he lands on the list.
Yeah, good point there. Also, as you mentioned, just one player moving in and out. There was less volatility this year in terms of the points breakdown. It went from 2,000 points going to the winner of the tournament to 750. That is what Scottie Scheffler earned. Did you like that shift from the PGA Tour to have for less volatility, less moving in and out as it relates to the playoff opener?
No, absolutely not. Thankfully it's a visual medium. Everyone got to see what I like. No, I didn't like it at all. And if you're a player, I think the change was, it was maybe a little bit too much volatility that you play for a certain amount all year long, and you're just trying to manufacture sort of all of this emotion. However, we went from five last year, which was kind of what I was anticipating this year, to just one. And that was only because Sung J.M. played so well. I don't like it at all.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm actually the agent of chaos, and I liked this move because it better rewards season-long performance as opposed to just a golf tournament that's 110 degrees, golf course that's not everyone's cup of tea. It's the end of a long season where you may have already been playing six, seven, eight times in a row to try and secure points. I did not like the fact that there was so much emphasis and so many points available for the first playoff event. This one I actually liked, that your entire season was not torpedoed after 1 week. I think a great indication of that was Sahith Theegala, who, again, like Keith Mitchell, did pretty well to begin the season without real status in terms of the signature events, to play his way into that, to get all the way to the FedEx St. Jude Championship. He was 67th out of 68 players. Despite that finish, Rex, in Memphis, all he dropped was from 44th to 46th in the standings, and now will be secure in the signature events for 2027. All right, that is a wrap on the FedEx St. Jude Championship. But coming up after the break, we are going to have a very nice and meaty Love It or Lave It section. We'll be going back to Memphis and discussing whether that should be a championship series event. Jackson Koivun, as well as John Rahm, his uncertain future on Live Golf and Beyond. Stay with us. All right, Rex, it's time for another edition of the world-famous Love It or Lave It section. If you are new here, first of all, welcome. Second of all, the rules of the game are very, very simple. You either love something or you love it. You scoff at it. You're a little bit of a curmudgeon. This is probably going to be a little bit of a sensitive topic for you, Rex, coming off covering the FedEx St. Jude Championship. But Memphis, do you believe this tournament should be a part of the championship series in 2028? Because its future after 2027 is very uncertain. Are you loving or laving the idea of this being a part of that elite series?
Love it, love it, love it. Can't tell you how much I would absolutely love it. And this needs to be a PGA Tour event. I cannot stress to you how important this is to the community. I have friends who had kids go through St. Jude. The work that they do here is absolutely amazing. All that being said, I will say, and I had to do a little bit of research on this, that we can all agree after watching the World Cup this year that FIBA is probably one of the worst run organizations in all of sports around the world. However, go back to 2022. Going back to 2022, FIFA decided to have the World Cup, the biggest event in the world, in Qatar. But it was normally played in June and July, and they decided, obviously, it's really hot there. So they decided to move it to November and December. That makes perfect sense. But it upended everything in football around the world. It actually led to almost a lawsuit between Fox Sports and FIFA because they wanted it in a certain window. Led to a lot of issues. And the reason they did this, as we all know, as you can imagine, Qatar is very hot in June and July, and they're worried about, wait for it, temperatures that can reach 104 degrees. I say all this because the PGA Tour is a very well-run event. However, temperatures reached 111 degrees on Sunday. There is absolutely no way you should be playing this event in August. It's a wonderful golf course. It's a wonderful community. I mentioned St. Jude. According to various sources, they were offered a championship series event starting in 2028 in the spring. They didn't like that. They turned it down. So now the PGA Tour is trying to figure out a way to make it work. That's unfortunate. That's a shame because I do think it should be on the schedule in the spring. It could be very cool. Not in August.
Yeah, I mean, there's no scenario in which this remains at this time of year. We'd like to see it in the spring. I do think TPC Southwind is an underrated venue, but it does get a little bit congested as we mapped out with Greensboro, which we're going to talk about in the next section in the voices in the crowd. It just gets really congested, particularly in and around that Masters time. I'd be totally fine, Rex, if this was relegated to sort of the FedEx St. Jude Classic that we'd grown familiar with, where Daniel Berger and Dustin Johnson were winning back in sort of the mid-2010s. I think it makes a lot of sense as a Challenger Series event as well. If you're having a purse between $7 and $10 million, it's great history, underrated golf course. Not sure, though, that needs to be a part of the Championship Series, so I'm going to lave that idea. Secondly, Jackson Quaven, who entered the FedEx St. Jude Championship as the bubble boy at number seven, did not advance, finishing just outside the top 20 for his week when he needed at least a two-way tie for seventh. Because of that, Rex, are you loving or laving the idea that Jackson Quaven has done enough to impress Captain Brant Snedeker that he should be a part of that American President's Cup team?
I'm so glad we circled back around to this because you and I touched on this on the podcast right after he won the 3M Open. You and I both had a lot of opinions about this. So I'm going to ask Professor Fred right now, Producer Fred right now, sound up. Let's take a listen. Let's take a listen to what
we're doing. Of course, I would put Jackson Quaven, unless the wheels somehow completely fall off over the next couple of weeks, which I'm not anticipating that they're going to do so. I think the issue, as you correctly point out, is who would you leave off on that American team? Don't really care. Find a spot for him. This is building not just for
find
this
a spot year. For him. That's your answer to everything.
The goal, the
find
goal,
a spot for him.
The goal is to win right now. And
obviously, right. Thank God, thank you very much.
Thank God, I'm not wearing the same shirt. That would have been very embarrassing after I had those things just a couple of weeks ago. I still love it, Rex. I still love the idea of Jackson Quaven because if not Jackson Quaven, then who?
There
Who
are
has stepped up over these past couple weeks that you would want to put over him? Because according to Data Golf, our friends at Data Golf, over the last 6 months, Jackson Quaven is still among the top 12 Americans in the world.
To be fair, I had a chance to talk with Jackson Quaven after his round today in Memphis. Even he told me he has not done enough. He felt like he needed to make it all the way to East Lake to give Brant Snedeker, the captain of the U.S. team, something to think about. He did add he feels like he would play well for that team. He feels like he could contribute to that team. But he admitted that, no, I don't think that I've done enough to prove to the captain that I should be on that team. And to answer your question, at the time we were having this conversation, he was 51st on the U.S. President's Cup points list. 51st. Any of the players
between 50 and
70 could have been qualified for that, because what you're asking him to do, the captain to do, is to pass over all of those players. Since then, and I made the argument that he had three events, well, at the time, two events, maybe three, maybe even four, if he made it to the BMW Championship, which he did not, to prove to the captain that he should be on that team. All he's done since then is not finish inside the top 20. I will give him style points for what he did at the Wyndham Championship, just getting to the first playoff event, because what he did on that final nine was very impressive. However, he has not done anything to separate himself. He's actually gone from 51st on the U.S. points list to 53rd. He has regressed. He has gone backwards for whatever reason. And I actually defended him because I knew this was going to be physically demanding, and he told me this afternoon it was very physically demanding. I asked him, what have you learned? He said, I've learned that I'm not superhuman, that this is really tough, that I need to take better care of myself. I need to learn things about this. And I also repeat what I said then. He's going to play on a lot of U.S. teams. However, the idea, find someone to kick off just to get Jackson Quaven on that team, just to get him some reps going forward, is the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever heard you say. And I've heard you say a lot of ridiculous things.
I mean, if you're matching Tiger Woods with needing the fewest possible starts to make the FedEx Cup playoffs, that carries a lot of weight. Again, I do not pay any attention to the point standings for the President's Cup team. Of course, he is outside the top 50 in points. He just turned professional. He was not accruing points last season because he's not playing consistently on the PGA Tour. I think the greater point here in the argument is, if not Jackson Quaven, then who? I feel really good about four players that you would have for captain's picks. It would be Colin Morikawa, Chris Goddard, Xander Schauffele, and Wyndham Clark. After that, you can poke holes in a lot of players. Right now, one of those players, Ben Griffin, is outside the top 20 Americans, according to Data Golf, over the past 6 months. Right now, he would be an automatic qualifier as we head into the BMW Championship. That's the last qualifying event. But you could poke holes in Justin Thomas's resume. You could poke holes in a player like Patrick Cantlay's resume, who, again, I think would probably get the nod based on what he's done over the past couple months as well. JJ Spahn has not played particularly well. Look at number 12 in that list, Jacob Bridgman. He hasn't done much of anything since Riviera. Akshay Bhatia, he just finished last among those who were playing in Memphis. It's not like all of the other players, Rex, have gone above and beyond and had these great audition tapes. If you're Brandt Snedeker and you wanted to have a little bit of a wild card pick, again, I think you could do worse than having a generationally great player. At least that's what we're projecting in Jackson Quaven.
You're saying you can poke holes in all of those players, and I would point out that Maverick McNealy is also on that list, and we just talked extensively.
Ryan Gerard, I would give a look to.
About how much I appreciated what he did over the course of this week and what he's done over the course of the last few weeks to make sure he got to this second playoff event. Ryan Gerard is right there. Michael Brennan, who you don't even want to mention, has won.
Michael Theo Bjornsson, if he wins at Belle Reve, I think obviously warrants serious consideration as well.
And my point is, sure, you can poke holes in all of those players as possible picks. As I just did, you can also poke holes in Jackson Quaven. So no one is a perfect pick. And when the player himself says, I have not done enough, I think you're on a hill. You're dying on a hill for no particular reason.
I asked Cameron Young if he thought he'd done enough to win PGA Tour Player of the Year at the Wyndham Championship, and he said no. Of course he's going to say no at that point. Again, you're not having 12 players who are the most deserving, Rex. You're trying to have the team of 12 that you think is the best and gives you the best chance to win. I still think Jackson Quaven among the top 12 gives you the best chance to win. We really have to move along. We're going to have more on that in the midweek show. The European Tour reportedly, according to our friend of The Athletic, Gabby Herzig, said that they are unlikely to allow releases for LIV players to play in their tournaments in 2027. Are you loving or laving that hard stance from the European Tour?
I'm going to straddle the fence on this one because I don't know why you would love or lab either one of those things. I understand where the DP World Tour is coming from. They are in a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. And the idea that LIV Golf 2.0 could create some sort of scenario where here are 10 events you can play on our tour and you could play the European Tour is probably attractive to a lot of players. So if you were the DP World Tour, if you were the PGA Tour, you're trying to cut this off right there. And this is just a business move.
Yeah, I'm loving this from a European Tour perspective. You're trying to put pressure on LIV players to pick a side and them trying to cherry pick 10 events on LIV 2.0, as well as some of the biggest Rolex Series events on the DP World Tour does not behoove anyone. And if you're on the European Tour, that does not make a whole lot of sense if you're having sort of a secondary circuit for those players and wanting to do both. If these players on LIV are forced to choose again, do you want to go on LIV or do you want to join sort of the mainstream golf landscape that we've come to know over the past several decades? If those players are making the decision once again to sign up with LIV, essentially the European Tour is saying that's where we're going to have it. And I love that sort of hardline stance from the European Tour. Final one, let's make this quick. John Rahm, are you loving or laving the idea that he will be a PGA Tour member in January 2027?
I'm laving that only because I don't see how it happens. He would have to get special dispensation from Brian Rolup in the PGA Tour like Brooks Koepka did this year. That was a one-time offer, not precedent setting. They made it clear in that moment, and a lot has changed over the last year. I think the message will be, you are welcome back on the PGA Tour. Here's your pathway back. Look at what Patrick Reed did. You're probably going to have to do something like that.
I'm laving it as well. I could see him being a full-fledged DP World Tour member in 2027. Again, we don't know what that pathway is going to look like, the championship series in 2028, but you'd like the odds of John Rahm potentially being the number one player in the Race to Dubai standings, thus being on the PGA Tour in that championship series in 2028, if that is the route that he eventually goes as well. All right, we're going to sneak in one final break before we have a very abbreviated Voices in the Crowd section. Stay with us. All right, Rex, it's time for the Voices in the Crowd section. After our fight about Jackson Koivun continued into the commercial break, this one is interesting. The idea from Beazle, who said, Greensboro, it is a nothing event, a waste of time. This, of course, is in relation to it being announced it's going to be part of that championship series in 2028. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely not. I think it's a great event, has a ton of history. It's a very good golf course. And if you put it in the spring where it's going to go in this schedule, it's going to be a great fit and it's going to be a great part of the championship series schedule.
Makes more sense in late April, early May, as it does, certainly more than it does in early August, but I'm with you. Of the events that have been announced so far, this is the one that, to me, is met with the biggest shrug at this point. I love this question from Johnny Beam, who said, my interest wanes after the Open. Will that change in 2028?
I don't think so. Like, I had to sit here and think about the schedule, and we don't know a whole lot about what the schedule is going to look like in 2028. There's going to be a build up to the playoffs, but I don't think it's going to be what it is now. And I think the playoffs are going to be almost like an all-star game. So yeah, you're probably going to be in the same boat.
There's a build up to the playoffs, which is different than right now, which is sort of just sort of a petering out of the regular season. They could revamp the summer. They could build for the summer when, again, more eyeballs. I'm optimistic that it will be better and not just everything's going to peter out after the Open Championship. And finally, this one, Rex, about a Grand Slam exemption from Caddy Master Looper, a Tiger-like exemption, obviously looking at Rory McIlroy in the career Grand Slam.
No, I don't see any room for this. Look, the whole point of what the PGA Tour is doing is to try to get rid of these safety nets, get rid of all the small print. We don't need to start adding small print. This is all about making sure the meritocracy is in place and the PGA Tour is doing this the right way and they're heading in that direction. I don't want to see more categories.
All right, I'll give you that one. And the final word, that's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex will be in Indianapolis for the LIV Golf Finale this week. We'll also be covering the BMW Championship at Bellwood. Thanks.